Well, good evening, everybody. We are back live from the Antlers on East Portage Avenue, another edition of the Laker Hockey Show, the fastest hour on radio as far as Damon Whitten and I are concerned. Bill Crawford, along with Damon Whitten, the head coach of the Lakers here tonight. And a tough weekend at Michigan Tech. We went in there with a lot of high hopes. Didn't play that badly, but couldn't score enough goals to get a victory. Wind up with a 3-0 defeat on Friday night, 3-1. On Saturday night, and even with that one, we had to score a shorthanded penalty shot in the final minute of the game to get a goal, and it has become a really big problem scoring goals for this team in the second half of the season. We're kind of matching up with last year right now. I've got some stats we'll talk about in a minute on that, but obviously our defensive game's not too bad. We're doing a good job there. We're way ahead of last year in defensive ability and cutting down on goals against. But the goals for are not a whole lot better than last season, a couple of percentage points maybe, and it's costing us hockey games at this point.
Yeah, well, it is. And, you know, you feel, you know, tough on our goaltenders, and I know they've done some really good things. And I was thinking about the best way to talk about our goalies. You know, Nick and Gordy have both played extremely well. There's you know, certain points in a game where they're making saves where you don't expect them to make them. They make some big-time saves, some game-changing saves, but it feels like the last couple of weeks they've given up that one or two goals that had a bad timing and a soft goal. And so, you know, and the other part of that is there's probably way too much pressure on them because of our lack of offense, that it's unfair to those guys to expect them to go out there and get a shutout or only give up one goal per night in order for us to win hockey games. So, you know, it's a very difficult position for those guys to be in. You know, and having said that, we'd like to get them both back to that level where they get the soft goal or the bad timing goal. You know, both first goals, you know, came in a momentum swing late in periods. And we're not good goals. They're goals we expect those guys to have, and they've shown, you know, all season long that they have the ability to make those saves. And they're too good to give up those goals. Again, there's that pressure situation on them, but they know that and they understand that. And it doesn't, but beyond that, like I said, they make multiple saves per game that are big time saves. So they're very capable. They're very good. And unfortunately, you know, we can't outscore our mistakes or those soft goals. So we'd like to get them back to that level where they're not giving up the goal. We want them to stop the shots they're supposed to stop, and they'll take their chances with those great age or those big time chances. You know, I think we only gave up about, 15 or 16 great A's on Friday, which is a little high for us. And that should be one or two goals. There's no way it should be three goals. And actually, we had all three goals as not great A scoring chances. So, and it's not just on the goaltenders, there's shot blocking lanes, there's sticks and passing lanes. And so there's other assignments. But, you know, we limit them. On Saturday night, we only gave up 15 great A's. Five of those were on their power play, which, you know, totaled 20 minutes, which is insane, and I'm sure we'll get in plenty of that. But, you know, 5-on-5, again, we did a pretty good job. You know, I thought our D-core played well. Our team structure was pretty good overall. Certainly a couple areas we needed to address. I thought our penalty killers did a tremendous job. You know, the minutes they had to log and kill was unbelievable. You know, again, 20 minutes. There's only one penalty on each team Friday night. And, you know, it's kind of mind-blowing when the game has just changed so much. They go from letting the teams play and the kids decide it to you know, just a much different standard. So that's difficult to adjust to. But I thought our penalty killers responded extremely well to kill the ones. We had 3 5-minute majors they killed off successfully. They had 2 minutes straight of a 5-on-3. We did a great job on, and Nick Kossoff had a huge save late in that one, and then obviously we earned the shorthanded goal or the opportunity off of that. So a real kudos to those guys, but as you mentioned, the offensive struggles you know, continue to be a challenge, no question about that, and again, not shocking. Last year we had those challenges, and you're not going to go from a low-scoring team to a high-scoring team in one recruiting cycle or one offseason, so it's a work in progress for sure, and an area we need to improve over the stretch run.
Yeah, and it's tough to score goals right now, and it looks like this weekend against Bemidji State, and I'd like to hold Bemidji State and the general comments about the Beavers till the second part of the program tonight, but it looks like we're going to go up against a very good team right now, 6-2-2 in the second half of the season at this point, and we're not going to have Al Globke, and we're not going to have JT Henke on either game this weekend. Let's talk about those suspensions and what happened there, and we'll get back to the goaltending a little bit too.
Well, and I think part of that before that, Bill, is, you know, all this talk about not scoring. You know, our last three of our last four series against the top three teams in our league, Chris Nell is, I don't know where he's at nationally. I haven't looked lately, but a top three goalie.
Yeah,
Jamie Phillips
is
a Hobie Baker candidate last year. You know, well, good chance he'll be there again. You know, and then Mankato, not only have a good goaltending, but, you know, I think the D-core on Michigan Tech, the D-core on Mankato, they're tremendous. You know, that's the type of D-core I think everybody in college hockey, pro hockey wants. Size, mobility, puck skills. They're hard to establish a forecheck because they can break out. So, you know, it's a real credit to the way they've built those teams and what they have. So, yes, it's frustrating. Yes, it's challenging. But a lot of credit goes to the opponents we played and the job they've done. So, you know, and that'll change, obviously. We're going to start playing some teams that are a little bit lower in the standings, more near around us, and we've got to stay on it and do a good job. I thought we generated some great looks. I thought Jamie Phillips, you talk about those timely saves. You know, we didn't test Jamie enough as we wanted, but Saturday night we had 9 grade A's, and 3 or 4 of them were just unbelievable opportunities. And, you know, at some point you've got to bear down, and you can't always say he's a hot goaltender. So.
Yeah, a couple of those were tough ones. We had kind of what I would say aren't the guys we'd want to have those chances, but that's the way it was. They followed the play and got in there. One of them was Aiden Wright right in front of the net, wide open. And a great save on that one because Phillips had to move, and then Drapluck followed on the play, got the rebound of Aiden's shot. He's wide open right 6 feet in front of Phillips, and he shot it right at him. But that's what happens. It's the quickness of the game. And I think you're right, and those points are really good. Mankato, Minnesota State, and Michigan Tech are the best two teams I've seen all year. I think Ferris State might be the other one I would throw into that. Really good defensive cores that give you nothing. They've constantly got a stick on you. You can't get open. I mean, we can score. Look at what Gage Terrell did on the penalty shot. As long as there's not a defenseman there, Gage Terrell had no problem. Went in, scored over the glove hand, not a problem. But these are good defensive teams, and you can't get free from them enough to get goals.
Well, and you mentioned, you said Mankato, then Minnesota State. You missed Bowling Green in there, and I think you wanted to throw BG because I think they're as good defensively, and Nels and their team defense plays that out as well. But like you said, you know, they're, those teams skate. They have great skating ability, and you don't have time and space. You know, part of that is you know, our youth getting used to that. Part of that is guys that we need to come back and have that same speed and ability to create separation or, you know, react quickly because they do get to your hands. So it's a difficult matchup for us in that regard. But, you know, I feel good about our team, leaving Michigan Tech. You know, you hate the results, and it leaves a little hole in your heart there and rips your stomach out. But we played toe-to-toe with them, you know, and we had to kill 20 minutes on Saturday night. Scoring chances were one apart with, you know, Mitch Hultz gone midway through the first period. He's on our top line. He's our top power play, a top penalty killer. You know, we didn't dress. We dressed 7 D-men. So we're already down a forward. And boy, I thought our guys really manned up and played. And, you know, obviously a couple discipline issues or timing issues. Again, I know we'll talk about that and then we can get into that. That's fine. But we like our team. We like where we're going. And we thought we went toe to toe, 5-on-5 with a good team. You know, we went in there. Alex Patan leads the league in scoring. We shut Alex Patan down all weekend long. And again, with 20 minutes with 5-on-3 time. So we did a really good job in that way. And we're encouraged. Now, you know, we're not happy with where we're at and we want to win those games. But, you know, we're moving and we're moving forward to where we want to be to play a team like that and to get to that level.
Yeah, they're a very good team, and we can't undersell them. I think they were ranked. There's an impromptu poll that goes around with the media every week on the league, and they were ranked number one this week. Most of the other pollsters besides me ranked Michigan Tech ahead of Minnesota State. I did not do that. I still think Minnesota State's the best team in the league, but that was interesting how that came out. That's part of the respect factor. Also, two other players, Max Vallas, who had game-winning goals both Friday and Saturday and had 3 goals against the Lakers on the weekend, was named Offensive Player of the Week today by the WCHA. Jamie Phillips, the third time this season, he's been named Defensive Player of the Week, his second time in the second half of the season. And Darren Smith, the goaltender, the freshman from Ferris State, third time in a row that he's been named Rookie of the Week here. He had 2 wins, stopped 51 of 52 shots up in Fairbanks on the weekend. And there's your 3 players of the week, and 2 of them are players who played against Lake Superior State.
Yeah, again, and we've got to end that streak for sure. And, you know, you go into the poll, Michigan Tech is 2-0-2 against those teams over the last, what, 3 or 4 weeks. So I can see why people would vote them number one today. But I share your sentiment. I think from what we saw, Mankato to me on paper or playing against those teams, you know, they have a little bit more of a dimension to them. But, you know, Tech just went 1-0-1 against them. So, you know, recently they are the better team.
Yeah, right now, looking ahead, too, if you want to try to project what's happening in the league, the fans love this kind of stuff. Minnesota State has series at Huntsville and at Anchorage left on the season, and then at home against Bemidji State. Michigan Tech goes to Bemidji State and then has a home series with the University of Alaska and then plays home and home with Northern Michigan to finish out the regular season. So you're trying to project who might finish where there. Lakers, we know how we stand. We know what we've got to do. We've got 8 games left on the season, a couple of games in hand on several of the teams we're in a battle with, but we need to win those games. We've got 2 with Bemidji this weekend, then up to Alaska to play Anchorage 2 games, then home against Northern Michigan, and then the season finale, the series at Ferris State, which is never an easy task there.
Yeah, no, I mean, critical games. And again, we still have a chance to finish very well. And obviously, mm-hmm. when you look at that first place Mankato, if they hold that position, that's not a matchup I think anybody's really looking forward to. So, you know, that's one where you really look at making sure you try to avoid that in the first round. So we've got our hands full with the opponents we have coming in. We have games in hand. And again, we've played most of these teams in this pod that we're kind of sitting in. And, you know, I like us. I think if we can play the way we played, you know, Saturday Mankato and these 2 games at Michigan Tech, we're going to have ourselves a heck of a chance to really put ourselves in a really strong position for the playoffs.
Yeah, I agree with you. We're 2 back of Bemidji right now. We've got a lead of a couple of points on Alaska. We need to get some points, obviously, but we're going to play teams we can beat. Again, back to the question I asked a little while ago, how much of an effect will it have this weekend? We're going to be missing 2 of our probably leading scoring forwards due to those disqualifications on Saturday night, Al Globke and JT Hankey.
Yeah, well, I mean, it affects you. You know, there's opportunity for other guys. You know, as they go out, Jake Han and CJ Hayes come back in. So, you know, at least you have some bodies healthy and ready to be replaced, so you feel a little bit better about it. But, you know, it makes an adjustment. That was the hard part, too, you know, early on with Mitch gone. As you're saying, you get a power play chance, and there's Mitch who's on your power play, who's on your penalty kill. So everything's now adjusted. You have a guy who didn't rep a certain spot on the power play that you have to ad lib and play on the fly to try to get your power play kind of going and on the same page. So it affects everything when somebody goes out in the game. And then same thing, at least we have a few days to prep for those replacement places where Hankey plays in the power play, where Globke plays. So we'll get a chance to spend a little bit more time in those situations. And then obviously Saturday, they'll be eligible to return. And, you know, we'll have some decisions on our hand at that point. But hopefully the guys go in, play so well. You know, you look at Max Vallis. How many games did he play coming up to the games, you know?
He had played in 6. Those
6
were games 7 and 8.
Max Vallis comes in. He's a senior over there, and he's a 30-point guy out of the USHL. I recruited Max and have a tremendous relationship with Max, and he's probably a guy that should have played more over the years, but he goes in and gets an opportunity with a departure, with some injuries, and goes in and has a huge impact. So we're hoping we can have a guy that can go in and get a game-winning goal and grab a spot and say, no way, you're taking me out. That's what you're trying to accomplish with those opportunities.
Yeah, he made the most of his opportunity. He was named player of the weekend and the Winter Carnival weekend. They have this 2-game set every year. They're very proud of themselves when they win there. They've done that a lot in recent years. And Max Vallis was named player of the weekend, and then he gets the honor today from the league of being offensive player of the week. But he did have 3 goals, and 2 of them are game winners. You can't really fault him on that. And yet, you look back and you talked a little bit a few minutes ago about bad goals at inopportune times. I thought Vallis's goal on Friday night, the first one that he scored, was one of the goals you're talking about. He came in off the left wing. He was very wide. He showed great speed, but he fired the puck right up over Gordy's shoulder into the top of the net. That kind of goal should never get in. If that goaltender's over where he belongs, he should be able to stop that shot just about every time. And wouldn't you know it, the same thing happens the next night. And CJ Nick Kossoff, who holds the stick in the other hand, it was glove side for him instead of stick. It beat him over the same shoulder, CJ Eich getting in on that left wing. So those 2 goals are the 2 we're talking about. Those should not score. And yet it's pretty difficult to find any kind of fault with Gordy Dayfield or Nick Kossoff. They've been outstanding, And both of them made numerous huge saves in those two games.
Well, they did, and they keep it tight, and they give you a chance to kind of, you know, claw your way back into it. And again, the pressure is, you know, too much. It's not fair to those guys that we can't give them more offensive run support. But those goals came at, you know, the timeliness of the goals is also very critical. You know, Friday night, we're on the power play. There's, I think, a minute 50 left or something like that in the period. You get out of there tied on the road, and you can go in the locker room and say, hey, guys, that's a good road period. There's a great crowd. Crowds out of it, et cetera, et cetera. They get those, you know, soft goals, and all of a sudden the place is buzzing, and they've got some life and energy.
You know, DQs are so harmful to teams too. You know, we talk about that already, but we've had a number of them this year, and I think it's mostly because we have a lot of young people in our lineup, guys who just finished playing junior hockey, and they're used to playing at a little tougher level maybe than they're allowed to play at the college level. When you get into D1, you can't throw the body around like Josh Nenadol has kind of had to learn this year, that he's got to back off a little bit. He can't run through people. He's got to hit them and be good about it, but not get over exuberant. He's had a DQ. Mitch has had one in the past, and now we've got Globke and Hanke both getting them. And the retaliatory, I know that those guys got hurt. They both got cut. Al Globke got cut up in the head under his helmet, and he had to go for repairs and come back, and it was after that that he got the DQ for abuse of officials simply because he kept talking instead of quieting down. I think that's a maturation problem right there. And the other one, Hanke just lined up Max Vallas and really took him hard into the wall in the third period there, and he knocked a couple of the kids' teeth out. There was blood all over the place. I think that's what really got their coaching staff upset.
I won't be as nice as you, because is there some youth? Maybe. Is there bad calls? Absolutely. You know, and I spent a lot of time, and it's not sour grapes. The game's over. You know, we don't change. It doesn't control. But I think Mitch has never had a DQ. I think Mitch's were both misconducts earlier, and you know, a 6'3" kid hitting some kids or whatever. But you know, I'm not gonna, you know, I spent a lot of time on the phone with Greg Shepherd, 3 or 4 phone calls, and you know, he says the Mitch hits calls, it's a blown call. It happened right in front of their bench.
Yeah.
Dane Burks had the puck on his stick. All refs' eyes are on the puck, and there's no call. They want to huddle up, and then they let a linesman overrule their non-call. You know, their bench was going crazy because it happened right in front of their bench. And so good for them. They got a call made. But you go from no call live to a huddle and a 5-minute misconduct. It's not right. And it's a bad call. And Greg Shepherd was quick to agree. There's nothing there. You know, you mentioned Al Globke. He was fired up. The exact same hit happened to Al Globke. He got split open, had to go get repaired. And there's no call. And so that's where you start to tip a little bit emotionally. Like, you know, it seems like there's a different set of rules there. And so you try to keep your guys under control. You know, Josh Hanke was a penalty. He hit the kid, he hit Max Vallas in the numbers, but it's not a DQ. And Greg Shepherd, once again, says, I tell my guys time after time, don't call a DQ on the ice unless you're sure. He says it's absolutely not a DQ, you know. And if you have the chance to watch it back, Hanke's gliding into him. When they actually hit, it's almost back-to-back. Hanke has spun around.
It was.
It's back-to-back. I'm not sure how Max went in such a bad angle to the boards. Obviously, you know, I love Max, and we texted after the game Saturday, and it was, you know, a tough way for him. I know he had a great picture with no teeth and taking the MVP trophy, and, you know, certainly would never want to injure any of those guys. I love a lot of those players, and I root for them when we're not playing for them or playing against them, but it was not a DQ whatsoever. And, you know, so those are two very blown calls and very important calls that swing a game.
Well, and the thing is, earlier in the game, JT Hanke got hurt. He got cut. He had to have stitches between periods 1 and 2. He got slashed, and he wasn't a happy camper. And he was. But I agree with you. I don't think that warranted what they called on it. He did back across and hit him pretty hard. You got to hit a guy pretty hard with headgear on and a face mask to knock some teeth out. But I
think he just went in awkwardly. And I thought moments before that, I think 3 or 4 minutes before that, Hanke took a hit from behind from one of their guys who actually left his feet. And again, you know, could they call it? Absolutely. They didn't. That's fine. But if you're not calling that one, you can't call the other or vice versa. It was almost an identical hit, but their guy actually left his feet into Hanke. But Hanke didn't go in as awkwardly. So, you know, it's still a hit from behind or whatever. And, you know, I'll go back a year ago and, you know, some of the stuff that went on. But if everybody remembers, we opened up with Michigan Tech. We lose Chris Ciotti for 8 weeks with a broken hand from a vicious two-hander. So, you know, say what you want, but that was obviously huge last year to do it. And I like it. There's a little bad blood, a little rivalry brewing in the UP. And, you know, we want what they have. They're sitting in home ice, and we want that, and we're going to come take it.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting next time you play. I know post game, and I want to break here in a minute to get some spots in, but post game it got kind of rocky between you and Mel, and I'll come to your defense before you even defend yourself. I don't think you did anything to precipitate anything there. I kind of watched carefully what was going on the ice there. I don't usually look down to see what's going on in a handshake, but he just shoved at you. He didn't want any part of shaking your hand. And he and Joe Sean were both doing a lot of talking, and I didn't think that looked very good. And then post-game upstairs, Damon comes up to do an interview with me post-game every game, whether we win or lose. Well, Mel does the same thing, and they're both up there, and Mel kind of went after you again. We had to get a few people involved in between in order to keep that from becoming worse than it was. And he was shouting stuff about people can get hurt. He kind of was accusing you as coach of telling your players to hurt his players, but I thought it was ridiculous, and I lost a lot of respect there for Mel. I didn't think that. I guess that's why he's got the red hair. He's got a short trigger.
The fire redhead. Actually, we saw as we were driving home right outside of town, there's a Mel's Fireworks store. You guys all know. I don't know the town, but not too far out of town. And I thought I should really take a picture and tweet that out, and we would see the redhead get fired up for sure. But you know what? He's a mentor of mine, and I owe a lot to him. We've actually got a great relationship, and as you can see, we're also fierce competitors. And I think it's great for the rivalry. I'm glad Doug and Rich and really Joey and Gary, I thought, showed restraint. Bill, as you mentioned on the ice, I think things could have really gotten out of hand had our staff not responded appropriately, and all our players were there. A lot of our players saw it. And so, there's a time and place for some things. And with our relationship, you would hope that maybe he'd, whether it's a phone call or come around and talk eye to eye. So I thought it was unprofessional, but he's a fiery guy, and that's part of what has made him so successful. And again, just adds a little chapter to the rivalry, and it'll be some interesting as we move forward. But, that's Mel a little bit, and I got a lot of respect for him and what he's done, and he means a lot to me in our relationship. So we'll patch it up, and we'll just add it to the book between us. It's been almost worse. A couple times on the bench when I was there as an assistant coach, I remember one game, and I can't remember where it was. I think we were home at Michigan Tech, but I think we just got scored on, or maybe it was just a bad play, but all of a sudden I got drilled in the back of the head, and I'm looking up and like, what's going on? And I realized that Mel had chucked a water bottle. It didn't mean to hit me down to the end of the bench, but it smoked me in the back of the head. And so he's a fiery guy, and I've taken a little bit worse from him. But, again, I'm glad Doug and Rich had a level head on their shoulders and diffused the situation for our team and for the league, really.
All right, that's the end of that one. We're going to take a break, an extra long break probably here, but we'll be back with more of the Laker Hockey Show on ESPN 1400. All righty, welcome back to the second part of our show here tonight. We went a little long on our spot load there trying to catch up because this is an interesting conversation tonight. This show flies by every week. Want to remind everybody listening in tonight some of the things going on this weekend. We do play Bemidji State here, 7:37 on Friday night, 7:07 on Saturday night. You can hear both games on YSS, Yes FM here in the Sioux. We'll have both of them for you. No TV coverage other than the coverage out of town. Certainly in Bemidji, they can watch it. This weekend, a lot of stuff happening to try to drum up interest for the hockey games. We do have a white ribbon campaign and a whiteout going on Friday night. That's violence against women and girls. It's sponsored by various groups on campus. Wear white if you can on Friday night. Saturday, sponsor appreciation night and faculty appreciation night. I'm assuming there'll be some introductions there. And the softball spaghetti dinner fundraiser is coming up. That's an annual Valentine's weekend type of event. It's a fundraiser for the softball program at Lake Superior State. It'll go on from 5 till 7 p.m. For $10, you get pasta, lasagna, breadsticks, salad, dessert. $10 gets you in. It's in Cooper Gym, right across the hallway from the ice arena, Taffy Able Arena, and you can take part on that on Saturday night. So lots of stuff happening there, some good things going on. We'll talk more about that on our Laker Hockey Talk show at 8:30 on Wednesday morning. Damon and I will spend 20 minutes there previewing the Bemidji series. Don't forget Randy Russin's Hockey North show. That's Tuesday at 5 p.m. He spends a lot of time on Laker hockey as well. And both those programs right here on ESPN 1400. Well, we've got some questions from the fans here tonight, Damon, as we usually do, and one of them we've already kind of talked about, but we'll hit it again. what players are not playing, who's out for this weekend?
Well, by league rules, JT Hanke will have to sit on Friday night with a DQ. You get one additional game, and Alex Glowke will be the same situation, out. Everybody else is eligible. And, you know, one of the frustrating things as a coach, obviously the DQ cannot be rescinded, and that's why they're instructed to call misconduct unless you're sure. So that's tough. But now Mitch Holtz on it, again, a call that Our supervisor didn't think was the right call. We certainly didn't think that was the right call. Now he's got 2 5-minute major misconducts. The next one would add an automatic game. So now all of a sudden you got a kid who's 6'3" and a big kid, and a kid we're asking to play with a little bit more a bite and presence to his game. He might have to scale his game back to not put himself in jeopardy of missing a game. So those blown calls can be really costly for you.
Yeah, and that's tough stuff, too. You know, a couple guys who I wanted to mention, too, who could play this weekend, who I thought did a pretty good job this past weekend. They've been in and out of the lineup, but one of them in more than out, the other one out more than in. I thought Daniel Vernacci gave you some good minutes on Friday night. Unfortunately, fell victim to the numbers game and didn't play on Saturday. And Matt Johnson, I thought, was really good on Saturday night in particular.
Well, yeah, I think with Dan, you're dead on. He hasn't had a chance to play a whole lot. And a kid like that, you know, when you go in, we ask, you know, you don't have to win the game for us, but you have to be solid in your minutes. And I thought he did that. And I thought he did a really good job. And he didn't deserve to come out based on his play. As you mentioned, it was a numbers game, still continuing to get our D back up to game shape and some minor things we have going on. We elected to go with 7 defensemen again. And so somebody had to come out, and Dan was our guy, and he hasn't played a lot of back-to-back games. But I think the real positive thing for Dan, and we talked to him post-game, or I guess Saturday morning before the game, or once we announced the lineups, was that he's really put himself in the discussion to play again and get another chance to build off that good game. So, you know, based on that and based on the lineup today, you know, Dan will get another chance to go. So really happy for him to be able to go in and show us what we need to be seeing and play those solid, steady minutes. And you know, he's done well in practice, and that's what gave him the opportunity there. So, you know, good for Dan, and look for him in the lineup at some point this weekend, hopefully.
All righty. Any ideas as to why the big switch in the number of penalties from Friday till Saturday? There were 2 penalties called the entire game on Friday night. Both of them came in the third period. Neither team scored on the power play. And then on Saturday night, it was just the opposite to the Lakers. There were 14 penalties in the third period alone. 4 of them were major penalties. The Lakers took 9 of those 14. It was like night and day, and yet same 2 teams, and I thought they stood out on Saturday night playing the same way.
Well, if anybody knows, you know, let us know, and we'll let Greg Shepherd know, the supervisor officials, because I think he's asking the same thing. And no, you know, no idea. And I thought Friday night, like you said, was a good game. It was teams playing hard, playing fast. I thought both games had a physical element. You know, it was a great environment, a sold-out crowd. It's a big event for them. And I thought we responded pretty well to that in terms of our compete level, our discipline. You know, things got away from it at the end, obviously, with some of the things we went through and dealt with. You know, and again, Saturday started the same way. It was fine. There was a non-call play, and then all of a sudden you go from just a whistle and nothing going on to a huddle and a linesman calling a 5-minute major, and you know, that starts to shift the momentum of the game. And so you know, no idea on that, but again, I thought we responded. Rich Mitro had a really good, I thought, comment post-game Saturday as staffs, and we addressed it with the team today. Is, you know, as a team, I truly believe that you know, good teams, championship teams, you play right on the edge. You know, we want to be hard. We want to be blue collar. We want to compete. We want to battle. We want to play on the edge, but you can't go over the edge. And that was maybe, you know, even the Hanke, again, I don't like the DQ call, but he went over the edge on that. It was a selfish penalty that you can't do to your teammates. You know, Globke, the same situation there. So, you know, I think as a young team in that environment, we did creep over that edge for a little bit there, and it got a little bit out of us. And now we've got to get right back to that edge. But I think it's a really good learning lesson for a young team. You know, you've got to play right on it. Josh Nenendahl, you brought up earlier, has been a great example. Early in the year, coming out of junior hockey, he took some big hits and got some calls for it. He's learned what he can and can't do at this level and made that adjustment, you know, as an individual player. But as a team, we need to learn now. We want to be right along that edge. We want to impose our will. You know, Chris Bergeron from Bowling Green talked about it when we played down there. There was no time. There was no space when they played Lake State. When we're playing that way, we're very difficult to play against. But you can't go over the edge. And again, you know, when once you do that, that's disappointing for the team, but it's also a big learning lesson for a young team.
Yeah, one of the things that kind of hurt us on Saturday night too, you elected to go with the 11 forwards and 7D again, trying to still get Draplock up to where he's at game speed, because it showed a little bit Friday that maybe he wasn't ready to handle that load yet. But I thought that worked well, except we lost guys to DQs and the game misconducts, especially Mitch Holtz early, and now we're down to 10 forwards, and then it puts a lot of pressure on you.
Well, yeah, it was difficult, you know, and again, a huge credit to the penalty killers. You know, Mitch is one of those key penalty killers, plays heavy minutes, and he was gone, and so Austin McKay and Josh Nenendahl, you know, they're kind of our third pairing, and Austin takes so many big faceoffs for us, both 5-on-5 and shorthanded, and so I thought they just did a tremendous job of stepping up and keeping a very good power play with Alex Patan and Malcolm Gould, you know, off the score sheet. So I thought that was a real strong effort by our team. And, you know, that's, again, part of the frustration. The other thing with the Globke penalty, Globke wasn't even on the ice. It had happened about a minute and a half, a minute 40 mm-hmm. earlier. He was off the bench. There was a whistle blew. Nothing was called. And then we go back out. There's a new faceoff. There's a phantom call against Bryce Schmidt, you know, going to the net. And then the linesman decides to go back and say, well, I'm going to call this now. So we go from nothing, it's been dead for a minute and a half, 2 minutes, to 5-on-3 for 2 minutes with, I don't know what, 4.5 left, 6 minutes left or something like that. Like, it was mind-blowing, and we didn't know it. And then you got to serve guys in to serve the penalties. And so we've got guys kicked out, guys serving the penalties in the box. I think we had 6-8 guys on the bench at one point. You know, we went, so it was pretty mind-blowing there. And again, you know, Greg Shepherd and I had a great conversation. Doesn't help. And I kind of told Shepherd at the end, when he told me there'd be no further suspensions, I kind of said, oh, so we're good, right? And he said, no, we're not good. I'm furious with my guys. And I said, well, I just meant it from my point of view. I can plan our practices. We can plan our practices knowing what our personnel is for the weekend. And he said, no, I am not good with it at all. He was upset. You know, and you can say whatever you want on the phone, but Shep's a good man, and it's a tough job. And I don't know, we were talking about it on the air about my text Friday night post game. I don't think we did. We were talking off the air. We talked about the Friday night game, one penalty, and actually late Friday night. You only talk to Greg Shepherd when things go haywire and you're mad and you're upset or whatever. So Friday night late, I don't know, 2, 3 a.m., I'm watching the game back. I'm like, you know what? I should let Shep know. His guys did a really good job. And I said, you know, probably an easy game to call, but your guys did a great job. And no good deed goes unpunished, because they certainly got us back the next night. So.
That's a good way to put it, too, because that's about what it was. You know, you look at some of these statistics. Pat O'Neill does a great job keeping up with all these things as we move along during a season. And this afternoon, he provided me with an update on stats we've been using in recent games. And it really shows the struggle offensively and the real improvement that this team has made defensively. The thing I really want to hit on tonight is we have scored last year on this same date after 30 games in 2014-15, we had scored 50 goals. This year we've scored 52. So there's where you see, okay, we scored a couple more goals. Offense isn't a whole lot better than it was. But last year on this date, after 30 games, we had allowed 102 goals. Right now we've allowed 80, even counting this past weekend where we gave up 6 goals to a pretty good Michigan Tech team. That's 2.67 a game. That's a huge improvement over last year. 0 goals allowed on the season. That last year we did that. We had 3 shutouts last year. This year we have 4 shutouts at this point. And goal games last year where we won the game by a goal, twice last year, 6 times this year. So their improvements are there. They're coming, and that's, I think, where you come off saying we're definitely close. We're not that bad. You came up after the game on Saturday night. We just got beat 3-1. We didn't really threaten very much offensively, but we lost 3-1 at another team's ice on their big weekend, and they're a good team.
Well, Bill, and you say that, and like I said, you know, scoring chances, 5-on-5 or 10-8. So do we need to generate more? No question. But, you know, part of that's our team D, but it's not like we're giving up, you know, chance after chance. And, did we outshoot them Friday, I think, as well? And again, we talked about that early mm-hmm. in the year. Last year, I'm not sure if we outshot anybody all season long. This year, we're doing it, you know, pretty regularly. I don't know where we're at now, but I know for a while we led the nation in power play opportunities. You don't get power plays unless you control and possess the puck. And so that, to me, is that one still amazed me, that we went from where we were last year to the leading the nation. So I think it's tremendous growth. It doesn't show in our goals column, but again, again, I still believe it's coming. You know, you lose Perfetto, who paced our team in scoring. Ciotti had a pretty good track record before, losing early, getting injured early on. So, you know, you lose a couple seniors who had been the big ability to score goals and impact the game. And now through a small senior class, through a small upperman class, we're kind of counting on some young guys to lead us offensively, and it's not an easy thing to do in any sport at this level. So we'll continue to evolve and improve, and you know, hopefully next year we see that same jump offensively as we did defensively. And if we can make that jump, you know, that's tremendous. But ultimately, that's the goal. We want to be a top 10, top 15 defense team defensively, and a top 10, top 15 team offensively. And I think there's, you know, we honestly believe there's some pieces in place to do that as we continue to build and move forward.
Yeah, just so we're straight on this DQ situation too. We had a couple of players that disqualified on Saturday night. That means they missed the rest of that game. Fortunately, it was in the third period when this happened. They will not play on Friday night because they get a one-game suspension there, but both of them would be eligible, would they not, to play on Saturday?
Yeah, they're eligible per league rules.
Okay, absolutely. So Hanke and Globke could be back in there in game two. And, you know, it's interesting to me because Al Globke played one of his best series of the season when we played at Bemidji back in November. I thought he was very good there. He had a goal in the 1-1 tie, the only goal we scored. And he played really well in the other game, which we won 3-2. So we took 3 out of 4 points from this team. They're going to be itching to get back at us this weekend. We'll talk about them in just a moment, but we're going to take our second break, and we'll be right back with more on the Laker Hockey Show on ESPN 1400. All righty, we're back for the final segment of the show tonight from the Antlers, and Chris Sabo not with us tonight, but I'm sure he's got something in mind for Valentine's Day this coming Sunday. You want to check down here at the Antlers and see what special they've got going there. I'm sure there's something. I'm just going to gamble and tell you to check on it because I'm sure he's got something going on. He had a great meal, by the way, on New Year's Eve this year. It was tremendous, and I've heard more good things about that than anything else down here that we've talked about all year. So look for something on Valentine's this coming week from here at the Antlers. They do a great job. We really appreciate them sponsoring this program every year and setting things up for us down here. Bemidji State comes in this weekend. We've seen them this season. They're a much improved team in the second half. I think the Fitzgerald brothers got it going. They got Nate Arntz. They got a few other really good offensive players and a great goaltender, Michael Bitzer. They'll be a handful this weekend.
Yeah, no, they've had a really good stretch, and you know, a little bit of a unique schedule for them. They stepped out of conference play a couple of weeks ago to play in the North Star Cup, and they beat Minnesota, then lost to St. Cloud in the championship team. And St. Cloud is, you know, a really good program, and they played with them. We were watching some of that last night, and you know, great game, tremendous speed. So they bring in a ton of speed. Then they had a bye week, and now they're playing tomorrow night in Duluth for a makeup game. And as you mentioned, Bill, off the air, they won't go back home. They'll continue on their way here Wednesday. They'll arrive Wednesday night, and you know, be just like Anchorage, sitting in our town for a couple days. And you know, it kind of drives you nuts as a coach to think there's another team sitting there waiting for you in your own building. But you know, they'll be here early waiting, and you know, obviously these are huge games and huge points for them as well. You know, we can go back to the series we played out there, and you know, that got us rolling a little bit and playing some good hockey. And you know, it's a good matchup. You know, they're good team speed. You mentioned the Fitzgeralds. They have a triplets on their team. Only the two play most nights, but Jerry's their leading scorer and is a very dangerous player. I can still remember clearly his power play goal off a one-timer over at Bemidji. So they do a good job there, and I think their penalty killing is top three in the nation. So it's not going to help our power play that has had its struggles as of late to go against an elite penalty killing team.
Yeah, you look at their statistics, and they are clicking at 22% on the power play. Their PK is really good, 90.6%. By comparison, the Lakers are down below 14% now after this past weekend, 13.8. And our penalty kill, which is really good, is at 84.9. So they're way up on us in both statistical categories. You don't want to take penalties, and you don't really want to test them too much with that PK. They've scored a lot of short-handed goals this year. The fans will like the speed of this team. They're very, very quick. The Fitzgerald brothers are not big players physically, but they are really good with the stick skills and very, very fast. So that'll be interesting stuff for us. Now, one of the things I wanted to ask you about, too, is I noticed last week, and I talked, I don't know if I talked to you about it or one of the assistant coaches, but I saw that Max Humitz, who's one of the players who we've signed, was traded from Muskegon in the USHL to Tri-Cities. That's going from a team down in the standings to one that's right up there in the standings. Tri-Cities, very, very good. Also coached by a guy you work with, former University of Michigan star player Billy McCault is the coach there. Did you have anything to do with this trade?
Well, you know, you certainly have your network, and you rely on that. And I think, first of all, a year ago, Muskegon, I think they lost in the finals. I don't think they won at all. I'm kind of forgetting right now. But Max was part of a team that went to the finals. I think as a coach, you always love your players coming from a playoff environment and a championship-level team. So they won the Eastern Conference, went on to the Clark Cup Finals there. And so you love that experience of a kid. Now, through that, as you often see in the USHL, you know, they kind of make some trades and build up because they think they have a chance to win it. And then that leads the next year a little bit barren sometimes. So Muskegon's had a tough year this year, and Max has kind of mirrored that a little bit. Maybe hasn't had the same players to play with and you know, started slow as well. But as you mentioned, Tri-City picked him up, and now they're in that mode. They think they have a chance to win a championship, and so they add a couple pieces. They sell some of their youth, and so Muskegon gets some young guys they'll have for a year or two down the road. But it's great for us to have Max in that environment. He went out, scored in his first game, and yeah, certainly, you know, Billy and I had a lot of conversations about what he was looking to add and what Max would bring to that team. And you know, Billy will play plays a very similar style to what we play, so Max will come back in and certainly know our expectations as well. And so it's a really good fit, both sides of it, and we're excited for Max to go out there and have a chance to compete for a championship this year in Tri-City in the USHL.
All right, he's one of I think 8 players that we can talk about who have signed. Another would be Luke Morgan, who's a very good player. He's playing, I think, in Cedar Rapids, and another guy who can put the puck in the net, and he's a younger player. He's a high school senior right now.
He's a high school senior. He's a late birthday, and he's a kid from my hometown. I think I was on the ice with Luke as a 7th, 8th grader, so I've known him for a long, long time, and you know, probably even before you talk about hockey, talk about off ice, he'll come in and be our hardest worker from day one, or right up there with anybody else. You know, we've got a lot of hard workers, but Luke is off the charts. He's one of the strongest kids. He trains with a skating coach down in the Brighton area that's trained guys like David Booth and Sean Horkoff, and you know, he can, from what his trainer says, he skates better than those guys. His technique, his ability, what they do, that doesn't always translate to hockey, but he's an elite skater. He's a special player because of those attributes for sure. So we're looking forward to it. He's over a 4.0 student at a 4.8 scale. He's a phenomenal student athlete, and you know, that's the type of person you want to, you know, build a program around. And we have a lot of those already here, so I'm not saying Luke's coming in to do that. We've got a lot of high character kids who are great in the classroom and on the ice, and so he'll continue to you know, to build our culture and bring in you know, just a great attributes on and off the ice.
Yeah, you could see your influence too on that Michigan Tech team. I think there were two players who are from Brighton, Michigan, who are in their lineup, who are both very good hockey players. And you know, that's normal stuff. The guys who know their area pretty well will quite often look that way to find some people. And it seems like there are a lot of good players come out of that Brighton hockey program.
Well, there are. You know, it's been a hotbed. But I think a year or two ago, we counted them up, and there's like 12 or 13 kids playing Division One. Jeff Jackson had a pair at Notre Dame, and, you know, Michigan's had some guys over the years. Tech's always been, you know, had the guys. There's a Finnish connection there that those kids go back home where they grew up or their grandparents grew up. So, you know, it is. It's a hockey hotbed, and obviously anytime you can use your contacts to get a scoop on somebody early or have that relationship with, you know, you want to do that. So we'll continue to hit it hard, you know. Rich and Doug have been out and doing a good job. And again, you know, we don't need a whole lot, but we're always active and looking. If we can make our team better, we'll see if it fits for what we're doing on and off the ice and try to make that happen.
You know, anything can happen in a playoff series. The Lakers right now are in 8th place. Actually, we're tied for 7th if you look at the standings in points. But if you were to give the tiebreaker in there, Alaska Anchorage owns it on it, so we'd be 8th. That would mean we'd go, if things finished today, we would be going to Mankato again to play Minnesota State. If we come up a notch in the standings, we could go to Tech again. A lot of talk on the internet today about how the Tech fans don't want to see Lake Superior State again, and they were talking, well, we won't see them again this season unless they make the NCAA tournament. I don't know what they're looking at there, because we could very easily be playing at Michigan Tech again in the playoffs, but we've got to get some points. We've got to win some games. Lakers, we've talked about who they have left. Looking at Anchorage, they play here against, they play us at home up at their place in 2 weeks' time. Then they play at home against Minnesota State, so they got the Mavericks going up there too. And then they finish with that home and home deal they've got with Fairbanks. So be interesting there. And Fairbanks is behind us 4 points in the standings, but they play Bowling Green at home this weekend. Then they go to Michigan Tech. Well, that's going to be really tough for Alaska right there. And then they have that home and home with Alaska Anchorage. So you look at what everybody else has got. You try to project what might happen. Last year, we wound up going to Mankato. I'd just as soon not go that far, if you don't mind.
Yeah, but I'd like to get home somehow, find a way. We're going to need some help and they have to go on an unbelievable run, you know, and that's been the goal all along. But, you know, and I think the other thing, you know, looking, I know Tyler Morley did not play on Friday night. I didn't see if he got back in Saturday, but if they don't have Tyler Morley, that's the catalyst of that team. That makes it tough. But some of the other matchups that are going, when Alaska plays at Alaska Anchorage, it obviously limits the amount of points that can go between those teams that are trying to catch us. So you look at that, and I think Northern Ferris coming up as well, and there's only one team. You know, do you want Ferris just to win and keep going and give us a chance to catch Northern? So, you know, basically it comes down to winning your games. There's a lot of scenarios that can play out, but we have to do our part in it. We have to do we have to turn this over and get winning some games. And you know, I think we would match up well with Bemidji and the teams we're going up against lately. And you know, again, I think we've learned a lot from these last few weeks, some painful lessons for sure. But I think we're a better team going out and playing with the pace we played with against Mankato, against Michigan Tech, and you know, we're excited about it. There's some frustration for sure. We're not happy with the results, but there's also an excitement. Our guys know, they still believe, and they still know we're close to doing some really good things here, and it's a good thing we had you know, some good parts of the first half to put ourselves in a position to finish strong here, and now that's all it's about. Last weekend's over, nothing matters, and the preseason polls don't matter, and now it's about going out and winning.
Yeah, most of the teams in the league, especially those we're competing with for playoff position right now, they have only 6 games left. We have 8. So we do have a couple of games in hand. The one we don't have games in hand on is Bemidji State, the team that's here this weekend. That's why these games are huge. But Bemidji does still play at home against Michigan Tech. And then they go to Huntsville for a pair of games, and they finish their season playing 2 games at Mankato. So they're going to have some tough times right there too, but they're playing very well. It'll be interesting to see what they do in Duluth tomorrow night. And then they come over here to play the Lakers this weekend. And as Damon says, they will be here on Wednesday night, and they'll be plenty ready and rested for that Friday night start. But so will the Lakers. If we could just find some goals somewhere, we could really have some success before the season is over. Defensively, penalty kill, goaltending, we've got that going. We just need to score some goals.
Yeah, it's all going to come together in one given night. You know, we can't have the outburst of, you know, the 4 goals against Anchorage there and the goaltending off or the one soft goal we can't overcome. So we've got to put all pieces together in one given night. The penalty kill's been there pretty consistently. Our team D's been consistently. Our goaltending has been very strong. But, you know, the last few weeks, maybe that one they want back, and that's got to get out of our game. So, you know, there's a lot to play for. And, again, our locker room's good. Our seniors have done a tremendous job. You know, Austin McKay, our captain, it's been really nice to have Eric Traplick back as an assistant captain. He missed such a huge stretch of hockey, but he's fully back in and taking a much larger leadership role. So that's been good. Bryce Schmidt has continued to do a good job, and he's more of our leader by example. He shows up every day, and, you know, he's done a very good job the last few weeks of, you know, putting maybe a disappointing first half behind him. And he's got a few weeks left to finish off a senior year and make it the best year of his career. So we're leaning on those guys to lead us through this last few weeks.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. We'll be both games, Friday and Saturday nights. We'll have them for you on Yes FM. One of the things I noticed today, I looked just briefly at Bemidji, how they've been doing things. They've scored 20 more goals than the Lakers have on the season, and they've allowed 18 less than we have. That's one of the reasons, but they're only 2 points in front of us in the standing, so you can throw that out the window. This weekend could be just huge. The Lakers need some success.
Man, I think as you mentioned, Bill, we want to play them 5-on-5. You look at the special teams, they you know, their decor shoots the puck extremely well. Jerry Fitzgerald will play up high on one of their power play units. He's got a tremendous shot. So, you know, we want to play 5-on-5 hockey against them. They've got an unbelievable penalty kill, and that matches up well with our penalty kill. But I think 5-on-5, our team speed, we like the matchup. We're able to go down there and use our speed to possess the puck down low and make good puck decisions. conclusions and put pucks to good areas. We also were able to forecheck their defensemen and cause some turnovers. So, you know, that'll be key to us once again. And, you know, we need to get a little bit more than those 9, 10 grade A's. We need to get up to 15, 16 grade A's. And, you know, if we can get up to that mark and get that goaltending, you know, I think it'll be a great weekend for us to move forward and finish strong for the WCHA playoffs.
All righty. Well, it's all on the line this weekend, Friday and Saturday night, 7:37 on Friday, 7:07 on Saturday night, Lakers against Bemidji State. If you're listening in, get out and support the Lakers against Bemidji this weekend. They need the help there, and it'll be exciting as we take on the Beavers here in Sault Ste. Marie. Damon, good job. Thanks for being here.
Yeah, thanks, Bill, and looking forward to talking again Wednesday morning.
All right, Wednesday morning. Don't forget Laker Hockey Talk at 8:30 right here on ESPN 1400. That's another show. Till next week on ESPN 1400.